welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for both the local church and the workplace. I'm your host, Jonathan Allen. As always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
It's amazing how time flies. We're almost to the end of January, and the month of January is always my time to give my trends in the church.
Yeah.
I think when I started doing this, I did 11 trends for 11, and then I did 12 trends for 12,
yeah.
13, and you get the picture. And now we're in 2015, and so I'm doing 15 trends for 2015. The reality of it is I could probably do about 25, but it's a point of diminishing return.
These are long blog posts.
Well, it would be a long blog post. Probably have to be two blog posts or three blog posts. I think we make it two these days. And, you know, if we get to 2050, I'll be 95 years old, so it will be irrelevant what I think the trends are. Nobody will be listening to me at that point.
4-hour podcast.
Yeah, it'd be a 4-hour podcast to get through number one. Rainer, what do you think about that one? I can see that. We are going to cover 15 trends, but because we try to keep these at 20 minutes or so, we will focus on a few that I think are some of the really trends that jump out.
And
just a word on this, Jonathan, where do I get my information? Well, I get my information in database research from Lifeway Research and other research that comes through. Some of it is anecdotal, some of it is observational, some of it is experiential. A lot of it happens as you and I travel, or as you and I are on the podcast and get feedback, or as you and I interact with people on the different blog posts. But the point is, it's a mixture of good database information and anecdotal and observational information. Now, the next question would be, why don't you ask me this? How many of these do you typically get right? That's a very good question, Jonathan. I'm glad you asked that. I would say that my batting average, when I look at it on about a two-year perspective, 2 years later, is about 800. Now, if that's major, if that's Major League Baseball, I am at the top.
Yeah.
I am near the top. However, if that would be something else where you need about 100% to do well, then I'm not so good. But I do
fielding
get about
percentage.
I do really well. Fielding percentage of about 80%, and I'm not saying that in a boastful way, but simply when people say, "How have you done on these?" I want them to know. That they are really pretty solid, because I'm not basing it upon my smarts, but I'm basing it upon a lot of information that's flowing in. So let's get to the 15, and let's focus on a few of those, Jonathan.
Yeah, number one, partnering with denominations.
Yeah, we will just talk briefly about that. More and more churches are becoming mini denominations within themselves, and so they will be partnering with different denominations or their own denomination. And what we will see is a blurring of the line between some of the large churches providing ministry resources, mission groups, etc., and the denominations themselves. And those lines will begin to blur more and more.
Historically, we've seen churches relying on denominations, and now we're looking at more partnership between churches and denominations.
I think so, and I think it's going to be a grassroots movement rather than a denominational down movement.
And speaking of partnering, a multi-site growth.
Yeah, this is just a phenomenon. I've mentioned on this podcast more than one occasion that back in 1992, I believe it was, when I started a multi-site church, I thought I was crazy, and everybody else thought I was crazy too. But now this is just a trend that it shows no sign of slowing down. As a matter of fact, we could relate this to what is going to be our number three.
And number four.
Yeah, both of those, smaller worship gatherings. But let's stay on number two for just a minute. Multi-site growth. I think the future of growth in the Western church in particular is going to be largely tied to multi-site as opposed to a single site.
Yeah, and that is because of, number three, smaller worship gatherings.
Yeah, it's been an amazing thing to watch the transition in just about 15 years from the largest worship gatherings were considered the really hot, maybe even best worship gatherings. My goodness, if you could get 5,000 or 6,000 people at one place for a worship service, that was considered huge.
And it was.
And it was something that garnered a lot of recognition. Now, that's not nearly as important. As a matter of fact, the millennial generation is insisting, the large portion of them, on smaller worship gatherings.
Yeah.
So what will happen to a church that is 1,000 in attendance, a large church, for example, and they have a worship center that seats 400, they'll have multi-services, and they will probably have multi-campuses mm-hmm. as well. A trend that I just see continuing, but you will see more and more of these smaller worship gatherings. Another reason that's taking place is because large churches are acquiring other churches, mm-hmm. and these churches that they acquire tend to have smaller yeah. worship gatherings
you
as well.
You were a member of that kind of church.
I was a member.
Or you are.
I am a yeah. member, yeah. yeah.
Unless something happened. You and Mike have a falling out now.
No, I'm having coffee with Mike Glenn today, and last time I checked, I have not been disciplined out of the church.
Good. And, maybe that's what he's wanting to meet about.
No. Yeah. Brentwood Baptist. No, I don't think he wants to meet about discipline me. No. It flows both ways. Brentwood Baptist is a church that has acquired several churches and will continue to. Most of the cases are the churches coming to them and yep. saying, will you acquire us? And, so I see the smaller worship gatherings continue.
Yeah, and smaller worship gatherings have a lot to do with smaller worship centers. People just not spending the capital on the 4,000 and 5,000 and 6,000 and 10,000 seat arena type worship gatherings.
Do you know a place in the state of Alabama I go where the attendance is about 101,000?
Yes.
Okay.
Bryant-Denny
Stadium.
Not that other one with two words.
No.
That's in West Georgia, though.
That's in West Georgia. Alabama. Yes. And so I'm there in some of those Bama football games, and I'm looking at 101,000 rabid fans all around me, and I'm realizing how little that stadium is used. I don't think it's used for anything else. 7 to 8 times a year.
Yeah.
That's it. And some church leaders, they pay their way.
Yeah.
Some church leaders are saying, hey, we've got this space and it's only used 52 or 100 times a year. We want a place that can be used more frequently. And so multi-use and smaller worship yeah. gatherings are more the trend these days.
Number 4 is continued flow from small to large. And this is not worship center sizes, but actual church sizes.
Yeah, this will be the mega churches or the churches running 1,000 in attendance or maybe even 500. This is a trend that is definitely on the books year after year after year, where a larger percentage of worship goers, church attenders, are attending church in larger churches. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean the total number of churches is declining. It doesn't mean that if you look at perhaps a ratio and you say, okay, 80% of people are in a church 200 or less. I don't know if that's the correct number. I just pulled that out of the air. But it does mean that the greater number of people will be going to these larger churches. That is a trend that will continue, a flow from the smaller churches to the larger churches.
And as a side note, we should point out that if you are a pastor of a small church, hope is not lost.
Well, and that anytime I give this type of statistic or data, there's this cringe moment yeah. that I have, because I know some pastors of these smaller churches saying, is there no hope for me? Well, part of the hope for you and your church is the millennial generation likes a smaller worship mm-hmm. gathering. Learn from the larger churches, learn from smaller churches, but it is not impossible. Indeed, it's highly possible for you to have a very effective small church, even though this trend continues.
Number 5 is there is a tipping point coming with the multi-teaching pastor.
When I speak
model.
Of a tipping point, I'm speaking of something that a trend has already begun, but the trend is about to accelerate.
Yeah.
Malcolm Gladwell, in his book Tipping Point, made this more popular term, but he did not originate it. But the tipping point that I'm seeing with teaching pastors is that even some of the smaller churches now have more than one teaching or preaching pastor on a regular basis. That pastor may not be paid or maybe only bivocational or nominally paid, but I'm seeing more and more of this where there is not one pastor, but there are multi-pastors, multi-teaching pastors as well. This is a trend that I think will continue in all size churches, and if I can just interject my opinion here, I think it's a healthy yeah. trend. It is difficult to come up with 52 quality sermons a year, even 40 quality sermons a year. I mean, producing that week after week after week. And I know that my son, Sam, has to produce 150 a year because he has 3 different sermons every week. And so that's difficult, and I think we'll see more and more of these teaching pastors.
Whenever you say 3 a week, that doesn't sound like a lot. Whenever you say 150, 160, I mean, almost, you know, 156. That's a lot.
Yeah, just challenge anybody to...
I mean, come up with 100 and... Well, I mean, and that's one of the bonuses, I guess, of also preaching expositionally. You just start and just keep going. And, you know, where you go, you keep going.
Yeah.
But if you had to come up and, you know, if we tried to block out 150 blog post ideas for you, which would last you about 6 years, that would take a while.
I don't know where you're getting your math, but that sounds good to me, Jonathan.
Well, you do about 2 weeks. So,
okay.
Well,
Jonathan is my mathematics specialist for these podcasts, and just
we're
listening
just making
to some
stuff. You making up stats earlier? I'm making up stats.
I didn't say I was making them up. I just said I'm pulling this out of the air.
All right, number six, the demise of the Sunday evening worship service. That'll take care of number five.
Oh, my goodness. I think that this one point could be a parking place for many people.
Yeah.
This may be the only thing that they hear. This is not any type of qualitative comment, prescriptive comment. It is simply an observation.
Yep.
Here is what I'm saying. I consider anything to be dead, gone away, when less than 5% of the participants are now participating. Mm-hmm. And what I'm saying is in 2015, we will move below that line of 5%, where less than 5%, fewer than 5% to be grammatically correct, will be having a Sunday evening service that is a different service than the Sunday morning service.
I have a few friends, the room that we're recording this in, David Platt's in, and there's a picture of David Platt in here. Sorry, he's not here with us. He's on the next podcast. No, he's not.
Why is David Platt's picture on our wall?
Because it was in here and I put it on the wall.
Thank you.
So, but David is at a church, or was at a church at Brook Hills, where they had three different services, but that evening service was a duplicate of the morning services. And that kind of goes back to these smaller worship gatherings where you're having multiple services that are the same, and that option, instead of having a different Sunday night, they're starting to have the Sunday morning service, quote unquote, on Sunday night.
And so David would prepare the same message that would be on Sunday morning and Sunday night.
Yeah.
Son Sam will be preparing different messages.
Yeah.
And I'm not speaking for him, but I'm speaking for many other pastors who have told me quite frequently that Sunday evening different message is a message that does not get near the attention of the Sunday morning message.
Number seven, increased favor with communities.
I love this trend. This is a millennial trend. And what I'm saying is for many years, and again, to say majority means I've done a hard data study on this, but I think the majority of churches in the United States have been very isolated from their communities. They have been kind of an island unto themselves. Now with the millennial generation coming into different leadership roles, Gen X as well, they are going into the community. They are gaining favor with the community. They are ministering to the community, and they're making a difference.
Number eight, a prayer movement.
I watch this take place, and there's several parachurch organizations that in 2015 will be emphasizing prayer movements. I don't think that those are coincidences. I think God is at work somehow. And then we have the movie coming out from the Kendrick Brothers that is about prayer. And just wait. I don't know if they've released the title yet, so I'm not going to say it. But I'll just simply say it is a powerful movie about prayer, in the line of the other Kendrick movies that many of us have loved for the last several years. And I think that too is going to play a large role in people asking the question: are we really praying sufficiently as believers? Are we praying sufficiently corporately as church believers together? So I do think that prayer movement will continue.
Number nine is one that we discussed quite a bit with Keith Getty when we met with him in the past couple of months, is congregational singing.
Yeah, I can imagine that some people are saying, no, wait a minute, we always sing.
Yeah.
But it's really not very participatory in a number of churches. Sometimes you're kind of singing along with the praise group on the stage, maybe the choir, but rarely do you get a sense in many of our churches that you are really singing, that your voice is heard as a part of the congregation. And I think Keith and I think the Gettys, Keith and Kristen, have a lot to do with this, but they're not alone, where they're saying that true worship involves the singing of all the persons there. Even people like me who can't carry a note and carry a tune, I will sing along gladly. Don't say joyful noise.
I've never heard you sing. Now I think about it. I don't know if we've been anywhere. We've been a couple things where
as soon as this podcast is over, I'll sing for you.
Oh, boy.
You asked for it. You got it. But I
no, I've heard you sing. I've heard you sing the 60s songs, all those things that you sing.
Okay. I'm kind of ashamed that you haven't heard the any of the great hymns.
I haven't
hymns.
Heard you sing about Jesus, but I've heard you sing about the Beatles. Or sing the Beatles.
Let's go to the next one, Jonathan.
Number 10, theological education in local churches.
Simply said here, just like denominations are merging with local churches and there's a blurring of the line, so will theological institutions and seminaries. They will become more local church-based. It's already happening. It does not take brilliance to see that this is a trend, but this is something that will continue to accelerate, that more and more theological education will be church-based.
Yeah, and just to put a note here on this one, Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, who's today's podcast sponsor, they have a program called EQIP,
yeah.
where they partner with local churches to provide seminary-quality training and theological education within a local church. So if you have questions about that, you can check out the EQIP program from Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary at sebts.edu.
Good segue, Jonathan.
Yeah, number 11. Number 11 is waning and reconfiguration of denominational structures. You saying that their structure is waning? Is the segue there?
Yeah, I do say that their structures are waning, and I do think they are being reconfigured. Many denominations for many years were top-down, heavy bureaucratic. Now they're becoming more streamlined, more ground-up type of movement, grassroots movement. I think denominational structures will be leaner, more efficient. Yeah. I think they will have to, simply because it will be demanded and because the resources will not be there. Again, this does not take brilliance to see this trend. It's already happening. It will just continue.
Yeah, there are only a handful of denominations in the United States who are actually increasing. Most of them are declining, and some of them in a rapid state of decline. So the resources, the people, the money are drying up. So that's going to force change.
It's going to force change, and I think this is one of those unintended consequences that's good. I think denominations do need to be more streamlined and less money going to bureaucratic structure and more money going to the field, to the mission field. So I'm encouraged by this.
Number 12, rapid increase in bivocational church staff.
This is one of those 15 that I just had us kind of put a marker on because I wanted us to discuss it perhaps a little bit more. There's not a lot of discussion about this. There's discussion about bivocational pastors who are among my heroes.
Yep.
There's a lot of discussion about full-time pastors and full-time staff. But an increasing trend is the bivocational minister, whether it be a student minister or a worship minister, the list could go on and on. I've even seen bivocational executive pastors in churches these days, where instead of saying you're going to come on and you will get a full-time compensation package at this church, you will be like Paul, the tent maker, and you may not be making tents, but you will be in your current job, and you will continue to serve in the church in some capacity, maybe totally volunteer or maybe part-time pay. I think that this is a major trend, and I think we'll see a lot of people who are in secular world business and other type of vocations move into this without leaving their secular job.
I've heard pastors talk about trying to find, you mentioned executive pastors or adult education ministers, and you know they will say something that, you know, Brother Steve just left as our adult education minister. Well, we've got Charlie over here who's a pastor, or not a pastor, he's a principal at a local high school, knows a lot about education, really, you know, great deacon, maybe a big servant in the church. If we could just find somebody like Charlie to take this spot.
Get Charlie.
Get Charlie on a bivocational time to just give him, you know, 4 or 5 hours a week if he can.
Yeah.
Now, the problem, I think, with churches here is that they always had a full-time guy, so we've got to replace him with a full-time guy or girl or whatever it may be. You know, my wife's full-time children's minister, so I do like that. But at the same time, think outside the box. Do you really need a full-time music guy? I don't know. If you don't have a choir, maybe not. Maybe you can get away with that.
I can't wait for the cards and letters to come on these comments.
Jonathan.Howe@lifeway.com.
Not Tom Rainer.
Send them to me. But I really think that churches, a lot of times, we've talked about this in the past, not just on this issue, but on others, they spend money because they've always spent it in this area.
That's right.
And maybe we'd do better to not have a bivocational guy, to have a bivocational guy in an adult education or children's ministry role, a preschool minister role, or a music minister, even pastor. We've talked about that, you know, bringing on the multiple teaching pastors. Maybe you bring on, instead of bringing on a guy full-time for the teaching pastor to help with a lead pastor, maybe he comes on bivocationally.
I think it is a trend that will accelerate. I think it's a trend that will continue. I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but on occasion I'll mention some of my sons when I speak or in these podcasts. And we did mention Sam,
yep,
right?
We've mentioned Sam.
And when you had your...
We mentioned Art's place of employment.
Yeah, Southeastern Seminary. So we have now mentioned Art.
Yep.
That leaves Jess.
Yes.
Nellie Joe would not like it if I mentioned two sons and did not mention one. Jess recently announced that he is starting a new church, the church at Spring Hill, south of Nashville. And what is one of the first things he's doing? He's looking for bivocational staff.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking for a worship leader. He really wants to find a children's minister. And so that's some of the things that are high on his priority, but it will be bivocational. And that's another example of why this trend is continuing as church planning continues to grow in popularity.
And number 13 is an increased difficulty in matching pastors and churches.
Wow. If I had a dime for every time a search committee told me they were having problems or a staff person or a pastor said that they were having trouble matching up.
Or I got somewhere and they told me they sold me a bag of goods, you know, and it's just not the same. And
matches are poor. Oh. The matches aren't happening. One of the reasons that I'm encouraged by, say, the Vanderblumen search agency is that is an organization that has come into the middle, really doing what denominations used to do in the past,
or
many would do in the past, and do a good job of matching them up. Now, do you always have to go to a search agency? No. But that is indicative that there's a problem with the search committee and with the candidate of whatever position it may be. And either they're not finding enough candidates or enough qualified candidates, or once they find someone, it's not the match they thought it was.
Yeah. And it reminds me of what William Vanderblumen said when he was on the podcast with us, and he was talking about the most expensive hire you'll ever make is the wrong one.
Absolutely.
Number 14, incarnational evangelism.
Incarnational evangelism used to be called lifestyle evangelism. I don't like the choice of lifestyle evangelism because it now has the connotation that there's no verbal witness.
Yeah.
Incarnational evangelism means that, yes, you will have a lifestyle witness, but you will be intentionally verbal with your witness, whether you're in the community, wherever you will be. And that's kind of a prelude of a book that I will be writing that will be released in 2016.
Just for immediate resources, though, people can go back and look at or listen to the Tony Marita podcast. We talked a lot about that in that one.
That's a great one. Yeah.
And the 15th and final trend for 2015 is the tipping point for small groups.
I think churches around the world, specifically in America, are finally getting it. I think they're beginning to understand that a church without small groups, or a church that does not put an emphasis on small groups, is a church that is not that healthy, and that a believer who is not in a small group, a Sunday school class, a home group, a cell group, whatever you want to call it, small group, a believer who is not in that is not developing fully as well to be in community with other believers in that group. So I see this as a tipping point. More and more leaders are getting it. More and more church members are getting it. And I, again, shameless plug, but I have a book coming out this year, 2015. It's called I Will. And it's about having the right attitude that leads to the right actions. And one of those actions is I will be in community with others. I will be in a small group. I see this happening more and more, the emphasis on small groups.
And this week's podcast has been brought to you by Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary's Doctor of Ministry program. If you want more out of your ministry, want to study with a world-class faculty, and need to stay where you currently serve, the Demon at Southeastern is the answer for you. Visit sebts.edu/DMIN for more information. That'll do it for this week's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
Watch these trends. Watch them throughout the year. Watch them even as it go into 2016. I want to emphasize again, this is not some type of mystical prognosis. These are things that are in many ways already evolving, and you will see them continuing. The question you need to ask church leaders, what is the implication for my church on each of these trends?
Thanks for joining us this week on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us online at tomrainer.com.